2, 7, 4. We'll open your Bibles to Proverbs 14. And Lord willing, this morning we will be pulling a couple of verses from this particular passage for us to think about. It is good to be together to worship, to remember the Lord's death until He comes again. I know many of you are not feeling well, and yet you've made the effort to come out and to be here. And that is a great encouragement to me and to all of us. And we appreciate that. It is always good when Christians make the effort to gather together to worship and praise our Lord together. When you look at the book of Proverbs, chapters 1 through 9 really kind of present this one flow of thought. You've got several passages that have a context. But when you start in chapter 10, it begins to kind of be individual proverbs. And sometimes, I'm not saying that there's not a context, but sometimes it's hard, very difficult to distinguish. And many of the times, we just simply study the Proverbs individually because it is hard to always connect them. And this is, Lord willing, what we plan to do this morning. I want to just pull a couple of Proverbs from chapter 14 for us to think about. There are so many different things and lessons that we could pull from Proverbs 14. We could look at Proverbs 14 in verse 3, which says, "In the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise protect him." It makes a difference how we talk and the things that we say. We could look at Proverbs 14 in verse 12. "There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." There's a way that I think is right, that I think I need to be doing, and oftentimes in contrast to what God has said, and that way will eventually lead to death. We can learn about how to interact with one another in verse 13. "Even in laughter, the heart may be in pain, and the end of joy may be grief." We don't always know what other people are going through. What they put on the outside doesn't necessarily mean that they are feeling that particular way. In Proverbs 14 and verse 34, "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people." If there is a message that our society and we within our society need, it's that sin should not be promoted. Sin should not be something to be bragged upon, but it brings you down. It destroys you. So many lessons that we could learn, and I encourage you to read the passage in its entirety, Lord willing, when you get home. But we want to focus this morning just on two separate verses. And the first one is Proverbs 14 in verse 4. "Where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much revenue comes by the strength of the ox." When you have no animals, you can keep your manger spotless, right? There is no work really that needs to be done. But if you do have animals, then there's a lot of upkeep that goes along with that. You're going to have to clean up after them. You're going to have to feed them. You're going to have to take care of them. It's going to be a process. So why is it that the farmer goes to this great extent in order to have animals? After all, it just serves for more task for him to do. Because at the end of verse 4, "much revenue comes by the strength of the ox." Sometimes things in life are messy but profitable. It is easy to have no animals and to have a clean stable. And yet there is a difficulty that comes. There's a messiness. There's a lot of work that comes with animals. But the trade-off is, It provides you with revenue. It provides you with money. It provides you with food to provide for your family. In a day and age where wealth was determined by how many animals that you have, it was important to have animals. Remember, you think about Genesis 13 and the story of Abraham. The Lord has blessed him with many flocks and herds. He is a wealthy man. Job is described as an extremely wealthy individual. He has all types of flocks and herds. Wealth was determined in the ancient world by how many animals that you had, how many fields that you could work, how much production you could get. You could gain a lot of money by the strength of the ox. Sure, it's a little bit more messy. Sure, it's a little bit more difficult. But if you're willing to put in the work, if you're willing to put in the effort, you're going to get a huge reward. Sometimes in life, and I think in particular with our Christian life, there are things in life that are messy, but they provide us with something greater. But we often shy away from certain things because of the mess and the difficulty that come and are associated with those things, and therefore do not receive the rewards of engaging in these actions. Consider hospitality. And those of you who are good at hospitality, you know the process well. Most of the time you spend several hours cleaning your house, getting ready for company. You try to make a dish that you think at least will be acceptable to the people that you're having over, right? And you spend several hours making dinner. And then you have them over and they make a mess. They spill things. They drop things on the floor. Maybe even they break something, right? And then after you have eaten, they all get to go home. And what is your task now? Your task is not done, right? You get the glorious job of cleaning everything up, putting the tables and the chairs away, cleaning up all of the messes that were made. Hospitality is often a very messy thing. And oftentimes it is just simpler in life if we just don't have people over. If we just don't show hospitality to one another because it is too much work and it is too much effort beforehand and it is too much work afterwards. It is much easier just not to have people over. I think many people can relate to Martha in Luke chapter 10. In Luke 10, we often use Martha as that negative example because she comes out to Jesus. She's trying to prepare a dinner for Jesus. And she comes out and she says, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me alone? It is good it's good that Martha wants to be hospitable. She wants to show this to the Lord, and quite frankly, she is overwhelmed by hospitality. There is just so much work that needs to be done, and she needs help. And she thinks certainly Jesus will correct her sister. And of course, we're not trying to cover that story right now in context, but many times people feel overwhelmed by hospitality. I think it is interesting. We often criticize congregations that have fellowship halls because we say that doesn't appear in the New Testament. And maybe they're trying to use it for fellowship and things, but that really doesn't matter. That's not allowed in the New Testament. That's not something that God approves of, and therefore they shouldn't have it. And we often rebuke them and talk negatively about how much money that they spend on those sorts of things, and they focus on the wrong thing. Do we go to great efforts to have people in our homes? Do we go to great efforts to show hospitality to one another, to visitors that come? Or is it just a little bit too much mess to worry about? We can rebuke others for doing it the wrong way. Are we really willing to do it the way God has commanded? It's always easier It is always easier for us to point out the flaws in someone else. It is difficult to look at the flaws within ourselves and say, I'm not doing what I should. I need to change. I need to correct that behavior. I'm not living up to this standard by God. Hospitality is a messy thing. Are we willing to engage in it? Because there are great benefits of Christians gathering together and getting to know one another and strengthening one another in the Lord and helping one another through these problems. But it is messy. And it is difficult. Consider Acts 16. There are two examples of hospitality that really stand out to me. In Acts 16, you'll remember that Paul is in Philippi. And he's traveling around and he lands in Philippi, and this is where he meets Lydia. And he preaches to Lydia and apparently her family as well. And her household is led to, to the Lord. And in verse 15, it says this, and when she and her household had been baptized, she urged us, saying, if you have judged me faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay. And she prevailed upon us. This woman has just become a Christian. What is her first action after becoming a Christian? She wants to show hospitality. Not only does she invite them over for a meal, she invites them to stay in her house for the remainder of the time that they're going to stay in the city. Which, given that Paul's travels, you don't know how long that's going to be. They have an open invitation to stay with them for as long as needed. Now that's amazing. When this woman got up in the morning, I doubt she expected company. I doubt she expected to be inviting live-in guests to stay with her. She knew that this would be difficult. She knew that it would be messy. And if you've ever had people stay with you for an extended period of time, sometimes that can be a little bit annoying. And yet she's willing to do it. Her first action as a Christian is to want to show hospitality to those who have strengthened her and brought her to the Lord. Later on in that chapter, when Paul and Silas are arrested, and they were singing hymns to God, throughout that process, the chief jailer is brought to the Lord. And they preach the gospel to him. And according to verse 33, in the middle of the night, they baptize him. And I want you to notice verse 34. First thing that he does to these condemned prisoners who have brought him salvation is to show hospitality. And he brought them into his house and set food before them and rejoiced greatly, believing in God with his whole household. Now again, if you notice in verse 25, the events that take place are about midnight. Between midnight and between the early morning, according to verse 35, all of these things take place. This man is willing to show hospitality to Paul and to Silas in the middle of the night. And in the middle of the night, he brings them home after being baptized. He brings them to his house and he sets food before them and he lets them eat. Can you imagine waking your wife up in the middle of the night and saying, honey, we got a little extra company. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Would you mind getting up and making some of these people food? And yet that's what he does. He sets food before them. He shows them hospitality. This is messy. This is difficult, right? But he feels that it's worth it. The Hebrew author in Hebrews 13 and verse 2 urges us as Christians to show hospitality to one another. And he says in Hebrews chapter 13 in verse 2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Hospitality is messy. Hospitality is difficult. Hospitality demands much of us. but it also carries great benefits. Are we willing to do it, even when we're not planning on it, even when our house isn't perfectly prepared, in order to gain the benefits from it? Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but much revenue comes by the strength of the ox. Hospitality is messy, but I tell you what else is messy is church growth. Oftentimes, as you grow up physically, you experience pains. And generally, those are just called growing pains, right? Not a big deal, they're just growing pains. And a lot of times in a local congregation, we experience many of the same things. If we try to grow, if you try to grow, then there are going to be difficulties that you have to deal with. We often read the early chapters of the book of Acts. And the book of Acts is an exciting book. And there's this picture of constant growth and people coming to the Lord. And the Christians are sharing this message with everyone they're coming in contact with. And people are just coming to the Lord in droves. And it is. It's exciting. And yet, as early as chapter 6, in Acts chapter 6, you've got all of this growth. We often overlook that in the midst of growth, there's a problem that pops up. There's a problem, honestly, when you look at chapter 6, 1 through 7, along racial lines that pop up. A lot of times, growth brings problems. It is messy, it is difficult to grow, and if we set out to grow, there's going to be problems. There's going to be personality conflicts. There's going to be issues that are going to have to be dealt with. Do you imagine for a second that when all of these people were being brought to the Lord and baptized on the day of Pentecost, that there were 3,000 on the day of Pentecost, that there weren't a lot of issues to work through? There are even debates among how to deal with the Gentiles as late as Acts 15, and there's tension about that. Church growth is messy. It's difficult. But it's worth it. I'm afraid sometimes we get used to the status quo. We get used to the way things are, and if they just stay the way that they are, we're fine with that. And we don't urge ourselves to grow because often we recognize there will be problems with growth. Things that we may not necessarily really want to deal with. May have to deal with issues like addictions to drugs, like divorce, various other problems that we really don't want to tackle. So is it just not worth it to grow? Just stay stagnant and keep diminishing and diminishing and diminishing until we close our doors? No. Church growth is well worth it. It takes much effort and it's going to be messy. But it's well worth the investment of bringing people to the Lord. Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean. But much revenue comes by the strength of the ox. We are called to be servants. In Mark chapter 10, in verse 45, as a matter of fact, Jesus talks to his disciples about what it means to be in his kingdom. He tells them that you don't act like the Gentiles act. You don't look to boss people around or lord it over people. That's not your job. No, your job is to be a servant. And Jesus uses himself as the supreme example in Mark 10, verse 45. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Was it messy and difficult for Jesus to be a servant? It cost him his life. It cost him great suffering on our behalf. It was something that as he was in the garden, he was in anguish about and prayed to God, "God, if this is possible, take this cup away from me. But not as I will, but your will be done." It is not always easy to be a servant. Philippians 2, verses 1 through 4. Esteem others higher than yourself. Esteem them as more important than you. And look after their needs. Being a servant is a difficult task. Looking out for other people, concerned for other people, concerned about their growth, wanting to help in whatever way and capacity that you can. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of effort. Are we willing to put this effort into servitude? In Matthew 25, in Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 31, the final judgment is depicted. All of the nations gathered together before the Son of Man as He sits upon His throne in verse 31. We come, everyone comes before Him, and they are judged and separated on His right and on His left. And they are judged on the basis of whether they were a servant or not. In verse 34, the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Enter into the joys of the Lord because you've been a servant. The ones on the left in verse 41. He will say, "Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and for his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me." It's messy to be a servant. It's messy to dedicate yourself to the needs of other people. But that was the example that the Lord gave us. And He tells us in Matthew 25, one of the things which we will be judged for. Are we making the effort to be a servant so that we can receive the rewards that come from being a servant? Where no oxen are, the manger is clean. But much revenue comes by the strength of the ox. Sometimes things in life are messy. Are we willing to put forward the effort for the Lord in order to reap the rewards from these things? Let's shift our attention to verse 7 now. In Proverbs 14, in verse 7, the author states, "Leave the presence of a fool, or you will not discern the words of knowledge." One individual said, "Show me your friends, and I will show you your future." The people that we associate ourselves with greatly affect the way we live our lives. Solomon talks about this in chapter 1 of the book of Proverbs. That's really one of the first things that he addresses. Be careful the friends you associate yourself with. Be careful the people that you are around, because they're going to cause you and try to convince you to do things that maybe you shouldn't be involved in. Be careful. Be careful. It makes a difference, Proverbs 5 and Proverbs 7. If we stay away from the adulterous woman and seek wisdom, or if we give in to the adulterous woman. It makes a difference, the people that we hang around. It makes a difference, the type of language that we expose ourselves to, the type of jokes that we listen to, the type of music that we enjoy. Those things make a difference in our life. We often think that we can listen to what we want. We can watch the things that we want. And we're unaffected by those things. We can be around worldly friends all that we want. And we're just not bothered because we're just that strong spiritually. And the reality of that is those who stay in the presence of a fool will cease to discern knowledge, which is the key quest in the book of Proverbs. Paul says something very similar in 1 Corinthians 15. In 1 Corinthians 15, in verse 33, when warning them about associating with those who are teaching false things about the resurrection, he says in verse 33, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." Be careful who you associate with. It will change you. And in the context of 1 Corinthians 15, it will take away your hope of the gospel. Those who we associate ourselves, those who we listen to, make a big difference. I want you to notice in Proverbs 14 how the fool is described. Now, let me clarify this by saying we could go all over the book of Proverbs and point out ways that the fool is described. I don't want to do that. I just want us to look in chapter 14 of the book of Proverbs and see how the fool is described. Because if we're associating with fools, if we're turning away from wisdom and knowledge, then these are the type of people that we're going to be around, and these are the people who will be influencing us. So in 14 and verse 1, "The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands." I think the wise woman of the beginning of verse 1 is probably comparable to the woman of Proverbs 31. She works with her family. She works at building up her family and taking care of her family. But the wicked woman at the end of the verse is foolish. She doesn't care about her family. She doesn't care. And she is willing to tear and to separate and to destroy if necessary. That's the type of people we'll be hanging around with if we're hanging around with those who are foolish. In 14, in verse 8, "The wisdom of the sensible is to understand his way. Wisdom seeks for you to discern the path you're on," in other words. But the end of the verse, "But the foolishness of fools is deceit." If we engage with foolish people, they deceive and tell lies. Does anybody like to be around people who are untruthful? And yet this is the type of company that we will be keeping if we're around those who are foolish and reject knowledge. In 14, in verse 9, it is taken a step further. "Fools mock at sin, but among the upright there is goodwill." Sin is not a trifle thing, as we see at the end of Proverbs 14 in verse 34, as we noted earlier on in the lesson. But fools make fun of sin. Sin isn't a big deal. It's okay if you engage in it from time to time. Loosen up a little bit. Enjoy yourself. Is it surprising that we compromise our values when we hang out with people like that? Proverbs 14 and verse 16. "A wise man is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is careless and arrogant and careless." You see, if we associate ourselves with fools, we tear down our own house. We involve ourselves in deceit. We mock at sin. And we're not cautious. And we're arrogant. That doesn't sound like the life that God has called us to live. On the contrary, in James 1 and verse 5, we are called to seek after knowledge. James says in James chapter 1 in verse 5, but if any one of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all generously without reproach, and it will be given to him. We are to be seeking wisdom. We're to be asking for God's wisdom, for God's direction to save us from sin. In James chapter 3, he urges us to have the wisdom that comes from God and not the wisdom that comes from the world. He says in verse 13, who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. The wisdom is not that which comes from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy, good fruits, unwavering, and without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. These are the things that we are called to strive for. Are we making effort to associate ourselves with Christians? Are we making efforts to go to the gospel meetings that we have here at our local congregation? Are we making efforts to go to the ones in the community? Are we making efforts to associate ourselves with people who we know will hold us accountable, with people that we know will keep us grounded? Or do we tend to avoid that so that we might associate with people that will allow us to do the things that we really want to do? You see, if we hang out with fools, if we spend time with fools, eventually we will become like that. And the wisdom which is from above, which we are supposed to be seeking after, will not be ours. But we will have the wisdom from above, from below. And we will be involved in all of the folly that is mentioned in Proverbs 14. Sometimes in life, things are messy. Are we willing to be messy for the Lord to accomplish His good will and His good work? Are we being careful who we associate with so that we might be strengthened in God? If there are any in the audience who have not yet made their life right with the Lord, we urge you, think about your relationship with God. If there is anything that we can do, whether that be to baptize you for the forgiveness of your sins or to strengthen you in your walk, if we can help you in any way, we urge you, come forward as we stand and sing. Softly.